And I have seen teams start to look for other jobs when the leader has gone it alone and not included them and not expressed confidence in them. There's a high price to pay, both physically, emotionally, and in terms of the organizational success.
And it's understanding as to how to engage different individuals, even when you are actually leading a team, that you understand that each and every individual is different and that you need to engage them differently.
My name is Sarah Kumalo, a businesswoman, a mother, and an award-winning mountaineer. I know what it feels like when the ground shakes beneath you. 3 times, Mount Everest sent me back down through avalanche, earthquake, and injury. 3 times, the world told me to quit. I kept going, and on the 4th attempt, I stood on the summit. Most would call the earlier attempts failure, but I learned something different. The shift is not the disruption. The shift is the lesson. It's not the fall that defines you, but the rise. Because true failure only happens when you stop taking the next step. In when shift happens, we explore the moments that break us and how they build us. Take a breath. The air is thin up here, and the views are worth it. Welcome to the Summit Journey. Let's go higher.
Welcome to When Shift Happens. I have been to the top of the world, and one thing that was clear for me is that nobody gets to the top alone. You may take the steps yourself, but the summit is mainly because of the people who guide you, support you, and anchor you when the air is thin and the step is too heavy to take. Today's episode is about the Sherpa within and the Sherpas around us, the network of mentors and conscious leaders who help us navigate the steep climbs of our careers as well as life in general. To explore this, we are joined by 2 remarkable conscious leaders and amazing women who redefine what supportive, conscious leadership really means and what it looks like. To explore this, we're joined by Thotsi Mamela, a transformational executive and global conscious coach whose work spans 3 decades as strategic leader, ethical governance, as well as a human-centered transformational leader. Welcome to When Shift Happens.
Thank you very much. It's an honor and privilege to be part of this engagement. And thank you for inviting us.
Thank you. And the next is Dr. Helena Dolny, an accomplished leader, author, and organizational change expert whose path stretches from community development across Africa to leading major institutions. She reminds us that sustainable leadership is built on emotional intelligence, courageous conversations like we're going to have today, and deep human connections. Welcome, Dr. Helena.
Thank you, Soraya. Thank you. It's a privilege to be here with Thotsi and yourself.
Fantastic. Has anybody told you you've got a radio voice? Anyway, together they'll teach us that real success is not about a solo summit. In fact, a solo summit is a myth. You know, we all see a single person standing out there, the flag flapping from left to right, but they didn't get there on their own. The strength of a network we build, the wisdom we learn on the way up, the trust we nurture along the way is fundamental to any success. So, welcome to When Shift Happens, where we talk about the Sherpa within as well as building the summit network. We all face moments where the ground shakes beneath us, a sudden job loss, a personal crisis, a business failure. Can you recall a specific shift moment in your career where your personal Sherpa network that you had built around you was a non-negotiable factor that kept you on the mountain? That's a figurative mountain, maybe the mountain itself.
Now, that's a very exciting question. I remember a time when I was young, when I worked in the underground movement, which is what taught me again what you're highlighting about us not being able to reach the mountain on our own. Yes. It taught me that there's different functional responsibilities that you would have from the team. You would have guides and experts. My responsibility at the time was to bring people inside the country that had to do underground work. So you would have a guide and expert that would actually do the actual work. You need support staff that are going to help navigate how you are going to actually ensure that the people are safe. And you also need route preparation, and route preparation would be done by the person that is guiding how the infiltration is going to work. But again, even there, you would have different focus areas. And safety and assistance. We were fortunate at the time that in terms of our struggle, we focused on different areas in terms of how to win this liberation war, as we called it. But yeah. For us to get to this democracy that we currently actually enjoy, we had people that were part of what you may call international solidarity. So, for example, we had an Irishman and a Dutchman that were providing support in terms of people coming inside the country that I was supposed to bring at the time. And we had the route preparation people. So I was responsible for preparing the actual route of people leaving a country, which was Swaziland at the time, to come inside South Africa. But there were also other people that Mac Maharaji actually worked with to ensure that they are going to help navigate them legally coming into the country and not getting into danger. The support staff were, interestingly, the lady who was a rural woman that actually stayed close to the fence or to the border area, that actually helped me in terms of understanding when the security forces would be on the fences and when do they go home, for me to understand that. And I had the responsibility to plan how we would do it, how do they get to the road, and when they are on the road, how are we going to ensure that the safety that they actually go through. It was at a very early age stage of my life, and I think I learned a lot of lessons through that.
That is interesting. You've said, I would never climb Everest, but it sounds like you've climbed even more. I mean, it's nobody gets to the top alone. That's what it's all about. Because without the lady at the border, the whole plan would fall flat. That is amazing. So everybody is important, but you just need to make sure they're at the right place, in the right role at any time. So Helena, yourself, what is your experience? When was that shift moment in your life?
So you asked when the ground shook.
Yes.
That's the shift moment. And I'm thinking of both Trotsi and myself. We've worked together for 3 decades in different circumstances, in different roles. Mm-hmm. And we've been through personal and professional crises. And I think what's true for both of us, it is the network that has held you together mm-hmm. when you're going through a crisis. You can't lead exceptionally well alone. Mm-hmm. It's others which will help you lead in a phenomenal way. And you can't weather a crisis either alone. Mm-hmm. Or you do that at your peril.
Yeah,
I've seen people fall off the precipice because they haven't sought counseling. They haven't looked for post-traumatic distress from the crisis they've been dealing with. So you need that network.
Absolutely. What is interesting, as an overachiever, the first time I rocked up on Everest, it was like, I can do this. But the mountain humbled me in many, many ways. And now I stand by, nobody gets to the top alone. You need partnerships, but not all partnerships are necessary throughout the journey. So they're shapers that you need to get you to base camp. They're not necessarily the ones that you need going further. And at times, we cling onto maybe strategies and partnerships that have gone past their relevance in that specific phase of our lives. To make it simple, our grade 7 teachers were amazing, but they were relevant for primary school. They were not going to help us with high school and tertiary. And it's the same thing. And it's not because they're bad, but because we've gone past What becomes important is knowing that who you are, what kind of a partner you are for other people and on their journey, and when to pull back when your relevance diminishes. Etoti, your leadership legacy is rooted in Ubuntu. This is one of the things that the first time I met you, it just came through without you saying much. Like, Ubuntu is quite core to who you are. How did a moment of professional or personal vulnerability in your past fundamentally force you to rely on the community? And how did it reshape your view of leadership?
I must say that I've been fortunate that from a very early age, mm-hmm. I understood that community is community that builds. And I suppose it's the age and the stage that we grew up in the 60s that we understood that. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, my mother was a domestic worker and always had to go to work. Mm-hmm. But I knew that we were safe at the time because we knew that it didn't matter what adult was around. We knew that we had to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. So for me, having learned even from that early stage, mm-hmm. that the community, we are because everybody is, and that without everybody in the community, we would have remained like orphans because my mother would have been at work and we would not have had anybody to take care of us, but we had the community to take care of us. I remember a time also when recently I had to go through a very difficult time whereby the administration changed, yeah. and government changed, and I found myself with a new minister with whom we just, as soon as she looked at me, she just did not take fancy to me. And I had to relook at what the team needed to do for us to be able to get guidance on how to manage this. And even though it was late at the stage of my development, mm-hmm. I have learned over the period that what is key is knowing that everybody is fit for purpose, that is part of the team. Mm-hmm. And for me, from the early stage when I was working also as with the community, because I used to be to work for the PERM at the time, and the role that I had was that of the collector. Mm-hmm. I knew that it was very important for me to understand as to who I could count upon. For example, I worked with civic structures. Those people humbled me because I needed to understand that even though I was representing a bank, my responsibility when I get to the community was these were leaders of the community, and I needed to get guidance from them in terms of how to engage the different community members that we needed to collect from. Mm. And what was even more interesting was to also get guidance on how to engage each elderly person that we had to talk to when they were just about to lose their homes. I mean, I remember going to speak to one elderly person who said, ningaitati tu room yenu at the ibek room yenu, but as for this home is mine. And it's understanding as to how to engage different individuals, even when you are actually leading a team, that you understand that each and every individual is different and that you need to engage them differently. I was fortunate to learn at a very early age.
Yeah, and it followed through. And as problems evolved, you came with strategies from yesterday, but solving new problems and sophisticated problems. That's interesting. Thank you so much for sharing.
When Totsi was talking about community and Ubuntu, there was this that came to mind. We're not all born into communities, and life happens that takes us away from our communities. So then how is it that we create a community that will support us? So, for example, my parents are Second World War refugees, so they end up as immigrants into the UK. I'm coming from a Slavic background, Czech and Polish. I'm in a Catholic school, which is mainly Irish immigrants. That's not community. My parents are a mixed marriage, so I don't fit neatly into the Polish community either. I found community in Mozambique. As a woman married to a South African, I was able to join the ANC. So the ANC became my community. And when I'm thinking of it, you start creating communities.
Yeah.
When my late husband was terminally ill, I kind of thought, who's going to get me through this? It's your community of friendships.
Mm.
And then there's a professional community. Mm-hmm. So I think there are ecosystems of communities that you create for yourself, because actually we weren't born into one. And life happens.
Yeah.
We move, we migrate.
Yeah.
People die.
Exactly. It's that is interesting. There's no excuse not to create a community. It doesn't matter where you are, and it doesn't matter if you migrate or things happen. If you are intentional, you'll get the right people around you. So thank you for that. Drawing from your experience, what are the immediate signs when you're dealing with executives that an executive is trying to go it alone in a major transition, right? What is the invisible cost of not seeking the support that they need? And how does supportive networks mitigate those challenges?
So in my experience, people get very stressed and they often not careful enough to look after themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the stress translates possibly into sleeplessness or shortage of self-care,
mm-hmm.
which is not great for decision making.
Mm-hmm.
Some clients I've had, they've gone quiet on me.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually get a sense that something's not right because they've gone quiet. And maybe they're not sure, but also they may be hiding stuff that they may not be too proud of.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is that they lose their team.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And I have seen teams start to look for other jobs when the leader has gone it alone and not included them and not expressed confidence in them. There's a high price to pay, both physically, emotionally, and in terms of the organizational success.
And what would be your advice? So you notice that the leader is going it alone and is detrimental to the success of the organization. What are the three key things that you would advise that leader, the approach in terms of change to ensure success?
So that if you don't look after yourself, you will impair your decision making. So like it's like a non-negotiable number one. The second one is that I was once in Moscow and they showed me a graveyard, which they said all of these people were indispensable. They were not. You have a responsibility to always be working with a team, and that if anything were to happen to you from one day to the other, that team has the wherewithal and you've done the succession planning, and that there's an inclusive leadership that they continue.
Mm-hmm.
You asked for three?
I think, yeah, and maybe you can add one.
I think over and above self-care is knowing as to who are the people that you can count on. Because what I've realized with team members is that some know you well enough and they've got your back, and others don't, and it's okay. But you need to go to those that you know have got your back and they have the sort of strengths that you require at that particular time so that they can hold not only your space, but also hold the space of others in the organization. Mm-hmm. So that team becomes of critical importance, knowing your team members.
Yeah. I love both the way you started. It's about knowing yourself. I think self-awareness is quite key. Many times we don't know ourselves enough to know that when we are too much, when we're pushing people away. And it mainly affects type A personalities. I don't know if that's the right term, but, you know, like overachievers. I can do this. And you actually don't realize the effect of what you're doing to the rest of the people around you and ultimately to the project and what you want to achieve. And I think that's why I'm passionate about coaching, which I believe you both are. And maybe we can touch on that a little bit later. So a question again to both of you. What's the practical difference between mentorship and sponsorship? And in today's demanding South African landscape, why is sponsorship a non-negotiable in advancing women in leadership when a true shift needs to happen in any environment, whether it's in the community or in business?
I remember a time when I worked in my early years, when I worked for an organization that it was just after 1994.
Yeah.
There was a hell of a lot of focus by organizations to retain people of color, especially those that were managers, because we had this exciting period in the country and understanding by organizations that they need to be inclusive. Mm. So I had worked for this organization for a year and I felt I didn't have enough work. And what I did then was, before a year finished, I actually resigned. Mm. And at the time with this organization, what they did was you could never resign to your direct boss. If you wanted to resign as a person of color, particularly as a woman, you had to resign to your boss's boss. Ooh. And what then happened was, when I resigned, my boss said, "Why are you resigning?" I said, "I'm bored. I've got nothing to do." And he said, "What do you mean you're bored?" I said, "I am bored." And he said, "I've got a different idea. I'm going to offer you to take over the role of your boss," who was the branch manager at the time.
Oh, wow.
And did I panic? I thought, oh, my goodness, I would not even know what to do. But Andre at the time actually practiced what is actually putting your money where your mouth is, because he knew that the organization needed people of color to actually help get the organization to the next level. So he did sponsor me to be able to get that role. But then I knew that I didn't have all the skills to do what was required. Mm-hmm. I then said to him, "Can I go and think about it?" And I went to two gentlemen that had been in banking for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And I said to Mango and Ayanda Mjegula, "What do you think? How am I going to do this? Because I don't have the experience." They became my kitchen cabinet. They became my go-to when I actually needed support and I was stuck, didn't know what to do. And I also had another support, which was Alain Mukoki at the time, who came and looked at all the loans that I actually declined. So he had technical expertise that he mentored me on, and the other two mentored me on how to navigate the environment in that banking space that I didn't have huge experience in. Mm. And I never forget that experience, because then I had just come back and I had started my responsibility as a branch manager, a role I had never had before.
Wow, amazing. I think it's realizing that you need help and having the right people. It's one thing, somebody actually said to me once, I think they were speaking to a group of us, to say, why do companies have marketing teams, strategy teams, and human resources? What if you were a company of one? Who would you choose to be on your board? Like, you need to be intentional, have the right people, not all of them, not one person will fix everything. Have somebody for something. And that's exactly what you did. I don't know if it was intentional or you just accidentally, got it done like that. And for you, Helena, what is your view? Mentorship, sponsorship, and even coaching. What are the different roles and why are they necessary?
So I think Twatsi's distinction between when you need a mentor for technical backup.
Yeah.
When I became managing director of the land bank, I thought, I've never been in a trading room.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's no way as a managing director, CEO, that you can be technically competent in all of the things of the people who are reporting to you. You can't. You can't just be that jack of all trades. Mm. So you've got to have a mentor who's going to give you enough technical support that you can have confidence in decisions that are being made, that you're going to have to sign off. And that's pretty big, is signing off on something that you are not fully competent in on yourself. Mm-hmm. The other is, you know, the leadership development. Mm-hmm. The people who I've seen make the biggest shift, ourselves included, and people that have coached, are people who, to go back to your point of the self-awareness, but it's not just the self-awareness, it's that receptivity to receiving feedback and to even soliciting feedback. I think some of the best leaders solicit feedback. And they're not looking for someone to kowtow and tell them how wonderful they are. And then sponsorship, you know, Wendy Lucas Ball was a fabulous sponsor for you, Totsi, and we both belong to the International Women's Federation of South Africa, and there is a very serious, intentional sponsorship that we look out for one another, we're looking out for opportunities, and we are seeing success of people, women being put forward to board positions, Shabalala becoming a deputy governor of the Reserve Bank. You need all three. You need that. And leadership coaching, Totsi's point about people being promoted, that's what took me into coaching.
Yeah.
I was at FNB. I was seeing their efforts to promote people of color into more senior positions. But then they weren't being supported. And then you think people are going to be set up to fail. And then somebody said to me, have you ever thought of being a coach? Because actually that's what you've been good at in your profession, is spotting talent and putting, giving people a promotional opportunity and supporting them.
It's when you, I didn't realize you actually worked at FNB. FNB or First Rand is the place where I was first introduced to coaches. I remember being asked, being told I'll be given a coach. And I freaked out because I grew up knowing that if you're not good at maths, that's when you get a, you know, extramural, you get a tutor. So I'm like, what is it that I'm not doing right that they think I need a coach? And then I was told, no, but Paul Harris has a coach. Michael Dunn has a coach. And I thought, oh, okay, so this is kind of a good thing. And it was explained to me differently. And it's such a blessing. It's been an amazing, amazing journey to know that I'm not alone. There's somebody that doesn't have to take the summit picture with me, but they're in my corner. Mm-hmm. Somebody that's looking at the blind spots. And so I'm very passionate about coaching. And it's helped me see my own blind spots and understand myself better in every situation. Does that mean I'm always perfect? No. I fall every now and again. But the coach reminds you that, hey, keep going. You better. They see the best of me even when I fail too. And I appreciate that about coaching.
You asked a question as to the differences. And I think it becomes very important as a coach to be able to clarify to your clients the difference between coaching, mentoring, and sponsorship.
Yeah.
Because for many, many years, I actually focused on mentoring. And with the mentorship space, you actually are providing guidance, but you can also provide advice based on your experience to the person that you are actually working with. With coaching, you have to seek for permission before you can tell a client what to do, because your responsibility is to ask the right questions and get the client to be able to find their own solutions on what it is that is best for them to do. But also what becomes critical is for you to hold them accountable for the commitments that they make and make sure that you form that partnership. And because it is a partnership, and it becomes critical also to understand when a client actually needs a psychologist to say, I'm not the right person. I believe you've got other challenges that would require different support and enable and allow them to go and get that different support. And sponsorship, again, we've spoken to what it is. It's somebody that would actually be enabling you to get that other support, that next level responsibility. And Wendy Lucas Bull has been my favorite campaigner over the years in terms of me being able to go to her and say, I am here, I am stuck. What is it that I can do differently? And her actually making sure that she would not only guide, but actually when she does the sponsorship, say, would speak about me in rooms where I'm not.
I was waiting for that.
Yeah. Speak about me in rooms where I'm not. When I got the role as the MD of Postbank, I was not even there. She was speaking to Minister Ivy Matsipe-Kaseboru, who was looking for a female black MD. And she mentioned my name. Yes, I had to go through the process on my own. But I wouldn't have known that there was that opportunity if Wendy had not mentioned me.
Yeah, exactly. That's lovely. And thank you for stating the difference in between mentorship, coaching, as well as sponsorship. Leadership is rooted in Ubuntu. We mentioned that as far as you're concerned and many other people. Can you share a specific time in your personal journey before you became the leader we know you to be, where you were most vulnerable and how the unconditional support of your own community or family fundamentally forced you to understand that I am because we are?
There was a very interesting time during COVID when the country gave us a responsibility to actually pay social grants, a special social grant of 350 to people that had lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. And to anybody else that did not have a job. It was a very difficult time. Mm-hmm. In the country. And I remember us as a team looking at whether we should allow the private sector to drive that project for us because that opportunity existed, or we should drive it ourselves as an institution. Mm-hmm. And I engaged the team and we decided we can do this. We're already paying grants anyway. What's the difference if we're going to just pay an additional different grant? But believe it or not, we didn't even have a system for us to be able to do that.
Wow.
And at the time, I ended up staying with my twin sister for 6 months because I could not go home. I mean, over and above the fact that it was lockdown for the first 6 weeks, even beyond lockdown because of just the pressure of the things that one had to deal with. My sister was really a great pillar for me. Because when I got stuck, I knew that I had somebody to talk to. I remember when I didn't know how we were actually going to pay, we could process. People could onboard and apply for the grant, but we could not pay these millions of people because at the time we had 15 million applications, but we needed to pay about 10 million people that actually qualified. So at the initial stages, I remember not knowing who we're going to use because we were at a stage where both myself and my minister were, to an extent, performance managed because the president would phone on a daily basis and how many people applied, how many people did you pay, have you been able to pay? And we're really stuck because many people didn't have bank accounts. Mm-hmm. I remember breaking down in the house where I lived with my twin sister and she went and said, "Ukhala ngeke ukusize." Crying is not going to help you. No. I'm sure you can find a solution. And it's interesting that after she had said that, I was able to think creatively. Mm-hmm. And remembered that we already had a contract with the post office that I could go and engage them. And all we needed to do was to do an addendum. I remembered that I used to work there. And that the person that was acting CEO at the time was somebody I could engage and had worked with before. And we then were able to find an interim solution. Yes, we were called a COVID spreader at the time because people had to go and queue in the post office. But later on, we were able to find all the retailers to assist, all the other banks to assist. It was a very interesting and precious time for me that taught me that you can only do things with other people and you can't solve all the answers, even as an institution, only on your own. But understanding the impact that this would have on the people was of critical importance too. Mm.
Thank you for sharing. As you said, your sister saying, Ukalak sees. I could see Sisintiki actually looking at her like, girl, get your head together. Oh, thank you for sharing that. COVID was an interesting time. And what I'm proud of, especially during that time, is how women leaders stood up and made a difference. And that excites me most during that time and leadership during the time. Dr. Elena, emotional intelligence is crucial to authentic leadership. In a high-stake moment of organizational crisis, how do you teach leaders to pause, regulate their emotion, and choose a response that builds long-term trust rather than one that dictates an immediate result?
Breath work. Okay. Mindfulness. Pausing. Yeah. I don't know in your circles who you have that have people with a short fuse.
Met a few of those.
So getting people to understand the power of breath to create calm in a brain that is about to see red and explode, and out of your mouth is going to come things that you are going to regret that will alienate people. That is really important. So yes, we talked about the foundational part of taking care of yourself, because if you're short of sleep, I don't know about you, but I'm irritable when I'm short of sleep. But then there are things which are triggers. So how do you stop a trigger? You know, and it is about recentering yourself. There's one breath, we call it the stop breath, or it's called box breathing. The US military uses it. In for four, hold for four, out for four, in for four, hold for four, out for four, because it's interrupting that amygdala striking up at the base of your brain that's going to be like red mist. And then you're going to do something that you're going to regret, and you can't reel in the words that you already put out there. The other thing in situations of real stress is a wonderful, I did something called leadership embodiment with a person who's unfortunately passed now. And it's about centering yourself, but not just the breath work. It is that you are thinking of the space that you're in and owning the space around you and growing tall within it. And then who's got your back? Totsi mentioned, who's got your back? And I give to my clients, I give them like a little walking figure and say, now put who's got your back. It looks like angel wings, you know, and it can be, it doesn't mean you know, who was there for you when you were a kid, just that, but also who's been the mentor. Or I would put Archbishop Tutu because he inspired me. So you have this like this backpack that's like a jet pack. And you can walk tall and grounded and centered.
That's beautiful. I can tell you're a psychologist. So as you're speaking, I'm like, let's breathe, you know, then let's continue. So, you know, like all things, things come to an end. I've got a signature question that I would like us to end with. You know, after all is said and done, life is about shifts. We're born crawling and we are excited about walking. But somewhere along the way, fear paralyzes us to the unknown, to the next phase. But because we all know shift always happens, when it's happened to you in the past, what did it teach you about who you are and who you are becoming?
The shift is happening to me currently as we speak. Okay. I've just since left a formal employment, for lack of a better word. And my day job is doing what I love, which is working with leaders as a coach, and for those that require mentorship, as a mentor, but also focusing in the leadership development space. But it was a scary period for me where I wasn't certain as to whether this is really the area that I want to focus on. But I started thinking about it 3 years ago when I knew that retirement, and for me, retirement means retire, which is putting on new tires for you to do different things and impact differently based on the things that you've learned. I've been involved in pivotal roles and responsibilities over the past 30 years. Mm-hmm. And for me now, the exciting thing is being able to support leaders, mm-hmm. to support leaders understand that we need to go beyond transactional impact in organizations that we serve, mm-hmm. but we need to make sure that the people that we lead, we have an impact on them, but also the organizations where we lead, we actually impact on those organizations. So in my journey, I've redefined mandates. For example, when I got to SASSA, everybody was saying, oh, our job is to pay. I said, then it means I'm in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. My job is not to pay. My job is, as a development activist, is to make sure that we impact the lives of the clients that we actually serve. And they are clients. They are not just beneficiaries. In terms of the constitution, yes, they are beneficiaries. But from our perspective, once we start thinking of them as clients, then we're going to approach them differently. We're going to engage them differently. But also, having built teams over the years is to help support leaders, especially when they get stuck, because all of us do get stuck at different times. Mm-hmm. Hence, the space for me is really exciting. And when I see the shift in a leader, that's mm-hmm. when I get really excited in terms of where we start when we have a contractual agreement with the leader and we're setting our cycle objectives. Mm-hmm. And you see that after the sixth session, you've seen a shift and the person is reporting back to say, here, I'm beginning to have more confidence, because for me, passion about partnering is what I've always had. And it's a very exciting journey. Yes, I'm learning every day. And Dr. D, with her having been in this space for years and years, mm-hmm. She's my go-to person in terms of getting support. And it's a privilege to work with somebody you respect, but mm-hmm. you also see as a partner in the journey to the next life. And this is the life that I've started. And I'm excited about the journey.
Thank you for sharing. I absolutely love the retiring. You know, we don't get rid of the car because the tires and, you know, need a change. We just change the tires and we keep moving. Love it. And Dr. Helena, yourself, your shift.
So becoming, that's, we call it a present continuous in terms of a verb.
Yes.
It's a lifelong endeavor.
It is.
So what is it that we want to become? I want to be a better person in terms of certain behaviors. And I'm pleased that my colleague here 30 years on says that I'm nicer than I used to be than when she first met me. But there's certain things around. I've always been the person who often in a group is willing to give the tough feedback. But there's a becoming, which is, you know, what is the way that you give feedback that can be truly supportive and helpful? So the becoming is an ongoing work that doesn't finish. But when shift happens, sometimes we think that shift happens because things happened to us. Mm-hmm. And so how do we respond to those things happening to us? But then there's the internal stuff as well. Mm-hmm. What is the shift that we want to happen? Mm-hmm. So with Mapium Klangu, I run a not-for-profit Love Legacy Dignity. It's more how we live and how we choose to die. And we run something called Live by Design. Mm-hmm. And I feel that those are shift by design. For example, I want to write another book on facing loss for the people who are possibly going to lose someone near and dear in their life. Mm-hmm. And they are going to be the ones that are left behind. If I am going to have time to write, I need to shift some stuff in my life. I need to get rid of some stuff in my life, say no to some stuff in my life. because otherwise there will not be the time. So what is the shift by design when you recognize the intentionality of how you want to live? I spent 11 days in the desert earlier this year trying to answer that question, including 4 days solo fasting for clarity of thought. And then they kind of say you've got a year to put those changes into place. But I do think shift by design is really important.
Shift by design. That's a beautiful place to end this. So what a profound and generous conversation from both of you ladies. Thank you so much for joining me today. So behind every achievement, this is what I've picked up from the conversation, there is a network of people who listen when you're uncertain. They study us. They look at our path when it's steep and we can't move. They show us where to put the next step. And they believe in us long before we believe in ourselves. We just need to know who they are, where to place them, and when to call on them. And vice versa, who we can be for other people along the process. So thank you so much for coming, Toti, as well as Helena, to When Shift Happened. I pray that it was as informative and liberating as it was for you, as it was for me as well today.
It was equally fun. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you. Leadership is not measured by how far you climb, but by how many hands you extend along the way. Mentorship is guidance. Sponsorship is advocacy, we picked up from this conversation. By the shaper within us, the inner compass of courage, empathy, and humanity is what turns a career into a calling and a team into a community. As we navigate our own mountains, may we never forget to build a network that grounds us with intention. That's what we picked up from Helena. Lean on wisdom that strengthens us and become the kind of leaders who steady the rope for those climbing behind us. Because when the air is thin up there and the world feels uncertain, what keeps us moving is not the summit, but it's reaching out for others. Thank you once again, ladies, and I hope you have an amazing day. If you would like to explore some of the lessons and tools we spoke about today, you'll find them in the show notes. If today's conversation spoke to you, share it with someone that's facing their own climb. Together, we are rising, one shift at a time. When Shift Happens is a Jackpod original podcast by Jacaranda FM. Let's go higher.